Well, we have a lunar eclipse coming up this week, and we have a couple of guys to talk with us about that eclipse, and we'll talk about the winter skies in general. We'll talk about last-minute holiday gifts, Christmas gifts, with Jim Lattice, director of the UW-Madison Space Place. He's a faculty associate in the Department of Astronomy at the UW-Madison. Space Place is located on South Park Street, 2300 South Park Street in Madison, the Villager Mall. So great, Jim, to have you with us.
Great to be here, Larry.
And Tom Hall is back as well. Tom is an optics specialist with Eagle Optics in Middleton. And great to see you too, Tom.
Good morning, Larry.
I think the last time you guys were on, I was off somewhere. So it's been quite a long time since I've seen you. Well, what are the details on this lunar eclipse?
The lunar eclipse is, a lot of people think of it as tonight, really tomorrow morning. I guess it does start tonight, about a half hour before midnight. But as we often point out with lunar eclipses, that first phase of a lunar eclipse is very subtle, and you wouldn't even really notice it if that's all you saw. We call that a penumbral eclipse. It happens as the moon is moving into the outer portion of the Earth's shadow. So the Earth's shadow has a sort of an outer ring and then an inner ring, which we call the umbra. And inside the umbra, the moon is completely immersed, completely blocked from the sun's light. But in the penumbra, it's getting still some partial sunlight. So it's not nearly as dark in the penumbra. So the penumbral phase starts a little bit before midnight tonight, then on the 20th in this time zone. But it gets much more interesting in the early hours of tomorrow morning, Tuesday morning. And probably the most impressive moments really begin about 1:40 or so in the morning when the total eclipse begins. That's when the moon is completely immersed in the Earth's shadow. And the middle of the eclipse is about 2:15 or 16 or 17, somewhere along in there, quarter after 2, that general area. And then it'll go for another 40 minutes or so after that. So that's sort of the prime period. If you want to get a look at the fully eclipsed moon, that would be the time to do it.
Set your alarm for again the time?
well, if you want to watch the whole thing, then we're really talking from about basically midnight until 5 a.m. But but the middle of the eclipse, I've been telling people to focus on the middle of the eclipse. That's about 2:15. An hour on either side of that, it'll be really interesting.
Are you guys going to be up all night to watch, or...?
Well, if the sky is clear,
I'll be out there and hoping for breaks. You got to do that, but yeah, I might nap beforehand at that hour.
The forecast. I hate to be pessimistic, but the forecast is bad. It's supposed to snow all night.
It doesn't look good. No.
But I thought I would. But we will if we if there's a chance of the weather being clear, then we're planning an event at Space Place. We've been just hoping for good weather, and we have an event scheduled at Space Place from midnight until 5 a.m. So we're planning to be out there to watch it. You don't have to come to Space Place to see a lunar eclipse. That's one of the nice things about a lunar eclipse is you really just need – you don't need any equipment. You don't need any sort of protection or anything like with a solar eclipse. We've got all these, be careful of this, be careful of that. Lunar eclipse, no issues like that at all. All you got to do is – and you can find the moon. It's not a trick either. So equipment is nice. Binoculars, small telescopes. The moon is really interesting to look at during a lunar eclipse, but not required at all. So it's a very low overhead kind of astronomical event.
All right, and so I'll have to get Emily out of bed at about 2 in the morning.
Yeah, check outside before you wake her up. But so we'll be, I guess I should mention that, so we'll have that event at Space Place, but if we decide to cancel it, if it really is snowing and we don't want to drag people out on, if the weather's bad on the hope that we have some way to look at it, which we don't once the clouds move in, we're going to put an announcement on the Space Place phone number, which is 262-4779, area code 608. 262-4779. So if people want an update, they're welcome to call that number later in the day, and we'll put an announcement
there. And let's assume that it's going to be nice. Well, you'll have some telescopes out?
That's right. That's the plan, is that we'll set up some telescopes and some binoculars so that we can. And we've got a little room set aside. We're going to set up out in the parking lot out front of Space Place, which will make it a little bit easier for people to find us. And we'll have a warming room nearby and some hot coffee donated by Cargo Coffee and some maybe some snacks or something. So that's if everything works out, that's the plan, the eclipse party.
All right. Any significance to the lunar eclipse coinciding with the winter solstice?
Well, actually, lunar eclipses are pretty interesting. A couple of reasons. I mean, they've been historically really important. They're not so much scientifically important now, but scientifically in the past, they were really important because when you look at the moon as it's being eclipsed, you're seeing it moving into the shadow of the Earth, and you can see the shape of the shadow of the Earth, which, of course, tells you about the shape of the Earth. And one thing I like to mention is that the shape of the Earth tipped off the shape of the shadow during lunar eclipses tipped off the ancient Greeks that the Earth was a sphere. And they knew that long before Columbus. 400 BC, we know that the Greeks had figured out that the Earth was a sphere because of the shadow of the Earth during a lunar eclipse. And this is something that any of us can see. You can walk right out there, and there you have it right before your eyes, evidence that the Earth is a sphere, and it's been telling people that for quite a long time.
And just from an observing standpoint, it also means during the equinox, the moon will be at its highest point in the sky. So it's real easy to pick clear air and get a good view at solstice. And so it's a good viewing time when it comes in this period.
Yeah, well, it's as far north as we'll see it since it's the day of the winter solstice. Yeah. That the winter solstice, by definition, is when the sun is at its extreme southernmost point. Well, the full moon is always directly opposite the sun in the sky. So if you have a lunar eclipse at that full moon, then it's going to be as far north in the sky. In fact, the full moon whether you get an eclipse or not, if you have a full moon at the winter solstice, that's going to be a very, very, that's going to be maximum northern extent of the moon. And since we live in the north, that translates into very high in our sky. If anybody noticed the moon last night,
you could
read a newspaper easily out there under that moon. And the shadows, where I walked the dog at about 10 p.m., and the shadow on the ground, my shadow was quite clear. It was reminiscent of being out in the summertime when the shadows are really, really short. It was like noon on a summer day. Well, and
the weather wasn't.
The shadow part, anyway.
The shadow part. Jim Lattice and Tom Hall, our guests today. As we talk about lunar eclipse, the winter skies, last-minute gifts, if you've got binoculars or scopes or that sort of thing in mind, I hope you'll join in with questions about any of those topic areas at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at talk@wpr.org. Tom, you folks busy at Eagle Optics these days?
It's been one of our busiest years.
Is that right?
It has. And, you know, we deal a lot with the birders that, you know, they're finally getting their equipment in over the winter because they used it in the fall for fall migrations. Mm-hmm. And now's the time to regroup. And hunters, of course, their hunting seasons are just wrapping up for most people. But, this is our busiest second day air day of the year, like most people will have. They'll send out more second day air packages today than, you know, we do all year long. So.
Well, now, is there what's new or what's captured people's interest this year?
Well, in as far as binoculars go, it's just kind of continuing redevelopments. We had a phase a couple of years ago where people were trying to put cameras in the less expensive binoculars, and there'd be a little digital camera in there. Unfortunately, that's moved on, or fortunately, that's moved on, I guess, in my opinion, because it's best to separate those two. But, you know, we keep getting a little lighter equipment and clearer stuff and good price points, and it's continually developing. But, boy, I don't think that there's the go-to piece this year that, you know, everybody tries to get after.
I remember I won a pair of those binoculars in a part of a golf tournament. I was a winner of this. And I thought, this is going to be a lot of fun, but, you know, it really didn't work very well.
Oh, the ones with the camera.
Yeah.
The image quality in the camera they could stick in there wasn't that great.
No.
Stick a second one in your pocket, I guess, somewhere.
Are the image-stabilized binoculars out pretty well?
Those still do very well. It's kind of a custom piece for most people because those do get bulky. The mechanisms for keeping the stabilization going mean that you're adding weight to them, and a lot of people are trying to move away from extra weight. They want to go lighter, but boy, they really work well.
Yeah, astronomically, you've let me borrow a pair now and again. And
the Canon binoculars for astronomical purposes, in particular, those are just superb.
Superb. Yeah. What do they run? What's the cost on?
Well, you'll be up around $1,500 for the less expensive ones. There's some not very high magnification ones that are in the $650 range, but those are more almost of a pocket size even. And they're still relatively heavy. So for astronomical purposes, they like the larger magnifications, 10 to 15 power, because that's where the stabilization really does some good for you.
Yeah.
You know, looking at the moon with them, for instance, there you just get great detail out of those because the image is so steady. And if you look at it in the penumbral phase with slight dimming, you can actually pick up some more detail just because it's not quite so bright. So that's a good time if we get clear weather to use them in that phase. That's a good time for the binocular or the telescopes to break those out and use them then.
Well, Nick in Green Bay has a question or comment. Nick, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I was just wondering what a good elementary telescope is for somebody that doesn't really into it.
All right. So beginner's telescope?
Well, Jim and I always like to recommend these days Orion telescopes as a mail order house out of California that has some excellent beginning equipment that you can get into for under $300 or even under $200. We do always try to warn people about the department store scopes that claim super high magnifications and might be under $100. The image quality is really very disappointing in those. Much like the image quality in those cameras that come with binoculars, they claim high magnifications, and that's not at all what those smaller scopes are good at. The smaller the diameter of the front lens, the less you should drive them for magnification. But Orion telescopes will get you a good 6-inch reflector within, you know, the $200 to $300 price range that will get you a superb image. I mean, you can really get some nice images out of fairly inexpensive equipment, and that's where we'll often try to steer people for good starter scopes. If you really want the refractor style scope, the one that has the traditional tripod, you know, and looks like a telescope, and you could use it for some land spotting, we like to recommend the 80 millimeter small refractors that have a short tube length or a short focal length. Those are nice and portable. They don't overdrive the magnification. They get a real crisp image, and you can use them for land spotting. You can go up eagle watching in the river with them and all those sorts of things. And that's a better starter scope than the dime store refractors, we often try to call them, with cheesy mounts and too high magnification and no useful eyepieces. So you kind of want to beware, but with a little research on Orion's telescope pages, they steer you right also.
Yeah, so you can find them on the web. I think if you just Google for Orion Optics might actually be the easiest way to do it. But their website is easy to confuse with another website that we don't like to recommend quite so much. So just Google for Orion Optics might be the safest way to do that. Yeah, although it's important also to take into account the age of the person using the telescope and things like that.
You know, we'll talk about that some more with our guests, Jim Lattice and Tom Hall. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking about the lunar eclipse, the winter skies, last-minute gifts in the binoculars, telescope, maybe the apps area as well, with two guests, Jim Lattice, director of the UW-Madison Space Place, and Tom Hall of Eagle Optics of Middleton. Larry Mueller here. Thank you for listening in. And join in at 1-800-642-1234 with your question or email at talk@wpr.org. And John and Footbill up next. But before we get to John, let's go back to the Christmas gift ideas a little bit more. Jimmy, I know there were some things you wanted to say.
Well, I was just going to mention, I agree with everything Tom said about Eagle Optics and I'm sorry, about Orion Optics and their alternatives there. They do have a wide range of alternatives. It's important to think about whether it's sort of a different question if you're buying a telescope for a child than for an adult. And it's important to go with simplicity for kids. And so one that I like to recommend that Orion makes that's pretty nice is a telescope called a Star Blast. And it's sort of almost all in one piece. The eyepieces will come out, but everything else, it's a unit that you can just sort of pull out and sit on, say, a picnic table or something along that line, and it's almost ready to go. It's very simple to set up and encourages kids to point it. It's easy to point, and so they're encouraged to find something in the sky and point to it themselves. There's plenty of telescopes that are computerized and all that kind of stuff, and Orion has their share of those things. But a small telescope that's easy to set up and easy to use is a really important thing, I think, in encouraging kids. One thing to stay away from for kids are equatorial mountings. Mm-hmm. Now, an equatorial mounting is a great thing for a serious hobbyist, but they're hard for kids to learn to use, and they don't really convey much of an advantage until you get more advanced. And I see a lot of people bring in their equatorially mounted telescopes and say, how the heck does this thing work? We haven't been able to use this at all. And they many times they'd be better off just without it. So so I'd pay some attention to that. If it's a Christmas present for a child or something, go for simplicity.
All right. And there are some apps out there, too, that are kind of interesting, aren't there, Tom?
Well, we saw a couple of new ones that we really enjoyed, and they'll work on your iPhones or iPod Touches. And in particular, for a couple of dollars more for one of them, they'll work on an iPad with a great large screen. But there's one called Star Walk that uses the iPad's GPS and its orientation so that you literally just hold it in front of a section of the sky, and it will present that section of the sky. It'll name things for you. It has a short bit of history. I believe it does some satellites that you might find for tracking. There's another one called Sky Safari. That's all one word, all strung together, Sky Safari, that also does some telescope functions, so that might be one to look into. But Star Walk, two words in particular. Look in your iPhone store. Really gets great ratings, and everybody seems to love that one.
Now let's go to John in Footville. Hi, John.
Hi there. All serious sky watchers are wondering what that very bright, dominant satellite-type object is that comes from the north every night, heads directly to the south, and then cuts directly west. And I'm guessing it's only about 62 miles up, but that is just an opinion. And it's big, it's bright, it's so dominant. What is it?
Well, do you know what it is,
No,
Jim?
I guess I've got a couple of questions first. Like, where is the observer located, and what time is this happening every evening? Maybe
it possibly comes on as soon as nighttime, as soon as dusk. You can't always see it, but as it gets darker, it's very bright. It's very low. It's so dominant, I don't see how anybody could miss it. I check it in Baraboo. I check it in Sauk County. I check it in Dane County, wherever. It's right out there.
And is this a regular event at a
specific
time?
Every night. It doesn't miss a lick.
Boy, we were going to guess the International Space Station, but that has a varying orbit. You're not going to catch it at the same time.
Well, I was waiting for an astronomer, and I thought you were the closest to it, and I just knew that you must see it.
Well, we don't see it, though.
Yeah, I'm afraid I haven't noticed that object, at least not in Madison. Now, satellites, especially something like the ISS, are relatively low, and so it makes a big difference just where you're observing from the path and whether you see it or not. I mean, we can see a satellite in Madison that you might not see in Baraboo, for example. If it's a celestial object or a planet or something, then we're going to be able to see that from certainly the whole state, really the whole hemisphere. So it makes a big difference. How long do you see this from the time you first see it until the time it disappears? How long does that take?
Hours. I'm out there 2-3 o'clock at night, and I see it heading directly west. Then it used to head north again and veer off. But as soon as you get more information on that, give that information to Larry so that he can give us that final answer. I've been looking for an astronomer. In fact, I was going to call one. But we'll find the answer to this little mystery. I thought that thousands of people must see it.
Well,
they do. Thousands of people do see that. I'm pretty sure you're looking at a bright star like Sirius. Sirius is the brightest star in the sky, and in the evening you'll see it heading west. And a few hours later, it will have drifted well to the north before it sets, to the north of where you first saw it. It'll end up up to the north, and then it'll set early in the morning. So Sirius or some other bright star, depending on just what time, but you said early in the morning, it's going to be one of the bright winter stars. That would be my best estimate at the moment.
All right. Well, that's a good guess. Thank you, John, for calling. We'll see if we can come up with any other ideas as well here as we move along. Bob in Jackson, let's go to you now. Hi, Bob.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon.
Or should I say good morning?
No.
Say, I couldn't help but be intrigued by that fellow that was calling about the bright object just a moment ago.
Yep.
I have seen that thing, and I actually called up one of the governmental agencies, and it was such a phone tree I gave up. But now what I see is, again, like the fellow said, just as evening is coming on and it's getting dark, and I'm in Jackson, and I see it in the, I'd say probably north-northeast sky, and it comes, it's very low. I'm making my hand into a wedge here. It's got to be half of 45 degrees or even lower, and that's somewhere around 6, 7 o'clock. And by about 9 o'clock, it is at least at 45 degrees or more. I'd say more, probably more like 60, in the east sky. And it continues, as I look from north-northeast to east, it makes that arc. And it goes over, and the darn thing is there every night.
You're certainly looking at one of the bright winter stars. They're there every night, and they do pretty much what you're talking about. There's quite a cluster of very bright stars that that we think of as the winter stars, and several of them start off in the north. Capella would be an example, a very bright star that starts off in sort of the northeast and ends up moving to higher overhead, you could say more southerly direction over a period of hours. It's hard to say just which one it is that you're looking at. But if you see those doing that every night, then what you're looking at is the diurnal motion of a bright star. When they're low on the horizon, they often are confused for airplanes. Because a very bright star, when you look through a lot of atmosphere, will flash and twinkle. Looks like a police car, like emergency lights or something like that. When it's very low on the horizon, and then that appearance settles down as it gets higher into the sky. That's my best.
Well, now Tom, let me turn to you here. If you had that iPad app, which is Starwalk, I believe you said, and you pointed it at that, would the Starwalk app tell you?
It would indeed, and if it's part of a constellation, it'll draw the constellation lines between all the associated stars for you. And if you don't have the iPad, I guess I'd recommend getting on your computer and finding at space.com or one of those websites that will have free star mapping applications for you. Just put in a specific time on, you know, that coming night or, you know, the next few nights and tell it to point to the east or the northeast where you're seeing these. I'll bet you can get it to label what it is you see starting out at 6 p.m. just a few degrees above the horizon. And if you have it cycle through hour by hour, most of those apps will do that for you. You can see when it sets, you know, close to 3 a.m., again, just going a little north of west for you, perhaps, if it's the ones they're describing. So it's pretty easy to find some mapping software that ought to do it for you. Or if you want to spend $2.99 for your iPhone, get the Starwalk app. And I think it's $4.99 for the iPad. But real inexpensive thing that 5 or 10 years ago would have cost us hundreds of dollars just to buy the programming, let alone to have the screen in front of us. And
I tell you what, I am putting that Starwalk app on my iPad tonight, probably.
it's a real doozy. It's amazing what they'll be able to generate, just of course with the GPS that's built into those, and then the angle pointing switching that they have within the pad itself. That's what lets you see how it's oriented and where you're pointed at. I believe it also uses the camera in the iPhones for the newest editions of the iPhones, and it'll check against the camera. So it's a pretty sweet little piece of equipment.
Bob, there you go. Thank you very much for calling. And Frederick in Richland Center up next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Sure. Do you have any recommendations? I would think that it would be more cost-effective to perhaps buy used equipment just after Christmas. Does your guest have any recommendations for an adult who's just starting to get in to observing the sky through a telescope?
Well,
that's
sure.
My question.
If you're going to get into used equipment, I'd recommend trying to find one of your local astronomical societies. You know, you can even come into as far as Madison, I guess, if you want to come to Space Place. But the place to find good used equipment is within a club. Boy, I'm going to recommend that you know, try to find somebody who has the piece and he's willing to unload it. Or if you go to Craigslist or those kind of things, the quality is going to be so variable. You'll end up having to go to the club anyway to get some help in setting it up.
Yeah, you'll have to know if you go to eBay or Craigslist or something, you'll need to know what it is that you're looking for, because you'll certainly find telescopes for sale there. But it'll be a little bit tricky figuring out what would be the right one for you there.
So find the club. And how, what's the best way to do that? Just go online, I suppose.
I mean, we've got a good one in Madison, the Madison Astronomical Society. Milwaukee has a very active astronomy club, Milwaukee Astronomical Society. There's a good one up in Door County, has a very active club.
Wyalusing State Park has an observatory and an Iowa County club that's very active down there. They'll do viewings at Wyalusing just about every month through the summer months, if not more often. Sometimes they're open every 2 weeks.
Right, and the Iowa County group does things at Governor Dodge Park.
And that would be closer to you there at Richland Center then. Try for the Iowa County guys when they go to Governor Dodge State Park. They have a website, and I'm sure if you just Google Wyalusing or Wyalusing Astronomical Society, that one would come up for you.
Or the Iowa County, I think they call it the Iowa County Astronomy Club.
Okay, there you go. Thanks, Fred, for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. Open lines, get you on pretty quickly. Chris has emailed in and wonders, we talked a little bit about this earlier, but what are the pros and cons of image-stabilizing binoculars?
Well, yeah, the pros, of course, are that what you get in a binocular, if you're above 8 power or particularly above 10 power, is that the natural shake of your hands, you may even see your pulse, as you're trying to look through them, it's hard to hold them steady. We have a hard time even recommending binoculars above 10 power. We have some hunters who like to go up to 15 power, but boy, those are nearly impossible to handhold, at least in my opinion. And, you know, we've been working with these for a few years. the older we get in our store, the more we tend to like the 8 or 10 power binoculars. So if you want to try to go higher power, you either have to mount them on a tripod. You have to get a couple of specialty pieces of right angle, you know, attachment hardware pieces and literally have a tripod to lug around and mount them. Or you can go to the image stabilized binoculars at the cost of just a little added weight. And, of course, a little added expense. They really do hold the image steady by pushing on the prisms of the binocular itself in real time, figuring out the motions of your hand. In other words, the natural handshake that you have. There are small, you know, sensors within the binocular that will literally push the prisms in time with that. And it works tremendously well. Boaters really like them. People who are out on, you know, moving boats.
Sure.
It will not only take out the shake that's very high-pitched, the, you know, your hand tremors, but it will also take out rocking motions of the waves, you know, longer amplitude motions within the binocular itself. Fujinon makes some. They make a 14 power, 14 by 40. They will all use batteries. They all generally use AA batteries. And if you're using the image stabilization a lot, they will eat those batteries fairly quickly. So bring some spares and be prepared that, you know, you'll only get 4 to 10 hours worth of use out of a battery pack within them. But boy, they work wonderfully. And for astronomy, obviously, what you can do is see greater detail and see, oddly enough, fainter objects. Just because the image isn't moving around on the back of your eyeball, you get a little better response out of, you know, retina.
Sure.
Just by being able to hold the image steady. So they allow people to penetrate deeper into the night skies. see dimmer objects, get better resolution out of it. But they're, you know, a little more expensive, but they work really well.
Really well. Vicki in Minocqua, it's your turn. Hi, Vicki.
Yes, good afternoon. Happy to join you. In response to the comments from a few people earlier about the light in the sky that's moving across the sky, an earlier program on Wisconsin Public Radio in December, there was a guest who mentioned that it's the International Space Station that people are seeing as it moves across the sky, and it creates quite a bright light.
We had hoped to ask that, and it may be, except the first caller and I think the second one mentioned that the transit takes hours. So that's where we were a little confused.
The space station is gone in 5 minutes or less.
Yeah, it will move very fast because it's such a low orbit.
Okay.
But that is very bright, and that's an excellent object to look at. We all like to
it's fun to look at it.
But it also comes, what you get, the pattern is that we see a few passes for a few days at a time, maybe a week, and then we don't see it until the orbit has precessed around again to where it's favorable for us to see it. So we'll see a series of morning passes and then a series of evening passes and then a series of morning passes with periods in between of weeks when we don't see it at all. So there's a very good way to find out whether the International Space Station is visible, and that's to go to a website called heavensabove.com. You spell it heavens-above.com. And there are several sites that will do this, but I like that one best. Go there, you tell it where you are and what you're interested in, and it will give you all the information, whether you can see the space station or any number of other satellites as well.
Thanks. I'm going to try that website.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling, Vicki. Wes in Madison. Hello.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good.
I just wanted to bring up, you talked about the apps for your iPod and iPhone. There's also one available if you have the Google smartphone. I think it's called Google Sky. It's basically the same thing. You can just turn it on and point it wherever you want to look, and it'll tell you what you're seeing.
I had heard of that one, but I haven't gotten my eldest boy to put it on his Google Android phone yet. So I'll try to twist his arm into looking at that one. I have heard that's also very
really
similar.
Neat too. Yeah. Because you can point it at the ground, and it'll show you what you're seeing in the southern hemisphere.
Oh, that's excellent.
That is excellent. Thanks, Wes.
And I just wanted to ask, what would be the best time to see the eclipse tonight?
Yeah.
Well, real roughly speaking, the interesting part goes from about midnight to about 5. So that's a pretty long commitment. The earlier phases, say about 1 a.m., it's going to be interesting about 1 a.m. as the moon moves into the umbra. That what we call the total part of the eclipse begins about 1:40, and the middle of the eclipse is about 2:17 or something like that. Anywhere along in there would be a great time to take a look at the moon, and if you can see the moon at all, it's going to be very interesting looking in that period of time.
Okay, and sorry, but one more associated is where would the there's also a meteor shower, right? Where in the sky would that be?
There is a meteor shower, the Ursids, which is actually kind of overlooked in December a bit because of a brighter shower that comes in the Geminids earlier in the month. But they did say that the Ursids are a northern peak, I believe. So you'll want to, if you get dark enough sky and during totality, you'll want to look north with that. It's with most meteor showers, you can see them anywhere in the sky, frankly. But I would just try looking a little more northerly with that and see what you get.
It's a good point. The eclipse is a good time. Normally we'd be at full moon. Well, we are at full moon. And that makes meteors a lot harder to see. But during the period of totality, so 40 minutes on either side of 2:15 or so, would be a good time maybe to look for some meteors because the sky will be darker then.
And you're going to be up anyway. you're going to be up anyway, so you might as well take a look north while you're at it. All right. Thanks, Wes. Jim in Shatak, hello.
Yes. How are you today?
Good. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to let your viewers know that there's a program out there that I have used a number of times called Stellarium.com. Have you ever heard of it?
Yeah.
You're right. I use it all the time. It's stellarium.org is the website. And you're quite right. It's a free program. It's excellent. I use it all the time, and I recommend it.
And
I
what does it do? Jim?
It's a sky program. They call it a planetarium program. You start it up, and it shows you the sky the way it is at the current time, but you can change the time setting. You can change the location on Earth where you're seeing the sky. You can make it draw in constellation lines. It'll simulate eclipses. Like tonight's, which might be a good way to see it tonight.
Absolutely. Thanks for calling, Jim. Appreciate it. And Jim and Tom, thank you so much. Just once again, if you were thinking of going to the UW Space Place tonight and to view the eclipse.
Midnight to 5 a.m.
Midnight to 5 a.m. Call 262-4779. That's
right.
262-4779. And if, in case it's cloudy or snowing or whatever, there'll be a notice on the phone, and that'll save you perhaps a trip.
Yeah, I hope so.
Hopefully we won't have that. And eagleoptics.com is the place to find Tom.
You bet. Always available on the web.
All right. And, space, of course, spaceplace.wisc.edu. Tom Hall, optics specialist with Eagle Optics in Middleton, and Jim Lattice, director of the UW-Madison Space Place, our guest. Thanks for listening. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.